Thank you, Lathan, for the kind introduction and also for the opportunity to speak about asymptotically safe quantum gravity with matter in the colloquium. So before I start to dive into asymptotically safe quantum gravity, let me first motivate why, in my opinion, we need a theory of quantum gravity in the first place. And the current understanding of nature, of our universe around us, is based on two main pillars. And one is the standard model, which accurately describes most of our visible matter, the particle content, and like their interactions, their masses, and so on. And the latest discovery that complemented or that completed the standard model was the discovery of the Higgs, which provides like strong, and the standard model itself provides strong consistency tests or like strong experimental observational tests of the matter content that we can observe. The second main pillar is the theory of general relativity that describes the gravitational interaction of objects. And general relativity is also tested to very high precision in the weak field limit. And more recently, we also gained insights into the strong field regime, for example, by the observation of gravitational waves coming from the merger of two black holes. Or also the observation just taking a picture of a black hole in the center of the M87 galaxy. So overall, we can, at the accessible scales, we can describe nature with the standard model and with general relativity. However, both of these theories feature internal inconsistencies in different regimes and can therefore only be effective descriptions. And for the example of general relativity, these inconsistencies appear close to the center of black holes, where general relativity predicts that the curvature of space-time diverges. And that is, of course, just an indication that the theory breaks down. And one expects that quantum gravitational effects that happen at energy scales of the Planck scale, or in like conversely length scales of the Planck length, that these quantum gravitational effects cure these singularities or these inconsistencies. Similarly, the standard model features inconsistencies, and in the standard model, couplings are not constants, but they depend on the scale where we measure them. So, for example, the charge depends on at what energy we measure the charge. And this scale dependence of the couplings can be computed. And if we extrapolated the scale dependence, for example, of the charge in the standard model to higher and higher scales, then at some point we would encounter that the theory predicts that the charge actually diverges. This is also just an indication that the theory breaks down. And the only way to like remove that singularity is to set the charge to zero at all scales, which is obviously observationally inconsistent. It's very intriguing to observe that the scale at which these divergences occur in the standard model lies well beyond Planck scale. So well beyond the scale where quantum gravitational effects are thought to be important. And therefore, it's an intriguing possibility that the quantum nature of space-time might provide a UV complete description, so a description of nature that is valid at all scales. Now, in my opinion, the most straightforward way to quantize gravity would be to use perturbation theory, which is very successful when quantizing the matter content. And in this perturbative quantum gravity, one just writes down a quantum field theory for the metric, one doesn't add any new fields, and one uses the well-established framework of perturbation theory. And this framework actually works perfectly fine with a finite cutoff as an effective field theory description of quantum gravity. And those of you who have attended John Donahue's lecture last week are our experts on how to set up this EFT framework for gravity. And in this framework, we can compute the leading order quantum gravitational corrections to the two-particle potential of like scalar particles. If, however, we want a description of nature that is valid to all scales, we have to remove this finite cutoff. And by using simple power counting arguments, but also one can confirm that by computations, one can only remove this cutoff to infinity by adding more and more free parameters, such that in the end, we lose predictivity because we have to add infinitely many free parameters to make sense of this perturbative quantization of quantum gravity. And therefore, the perturbative setup when quantizing GR fails because we have to add infinitely many free parameters and therefore lose predictivity. So in summary, we have to find a new road towards a predictive description of quantum gravity. And let me actually provide you a roadmap for an asymptotically safe road to quantum gravity. I will first introduce the main idea of asymptotic safety, which is based on the quantum realization of scale invariance. We will then introduce the main tool that we use to explore such a scale invariant regime. And at this point, I would also like to mention that one can also put asymptotic safety on the lattice and perform lattice simulations of quantum gravity. But since most of the work on quantum on asymptotic safety with matter is actually performed using the function randomization group, I will only focus on these results. Then after introducing this general setup and giving a brief overview of the status of asymptotic safety, I will give two examples how the interplay of gravity and matter can actually put constraints on quantum gravity and what we can learn from quantum gravity by demanding that the matter sector, so the matter sector that we observe, is UV complete, so can be extended to arbitrary high energies. Okay, so when I think about quantum gravity, I think about taking a patch of spacetime and zooming into that patch of space. And at some point, I will see small quantum fluctuations that start arising. And if I approach the Planck scale, these quantum fluctuations will grow and become a little bit larger. And if I try to describe these fluctuations in a perturbative setup, as I've explained to you, when zooming in further, I don't really know what to do because I lose predictivity, so I can't make sense out of it. The key idea of asymptotic safety is that it's a quantum realization of scale invariance. So if I zoom in further, the picture just doesn't change anymore, and the theory becomes self-similar and would look something like this. Just as any other symmetry, scale symmetry would impose infinitely many or would impose conditions on theory. And in the case of asymptotic safety, it would put infinitely many conditions on parts of the theory space, so on parts of the couplings. Scale invariance can occur in two different fashions. In one of them, quantum fluctuations just decrease when going to larger scales, so they die off asymptotically, such that the coupling approaches a vanishing value. And this is what we call asymptotic freedom, and we are very familiar with this from, for example, QCD. The other alternative is that instead of going to zero, quantum fluctuations actually balance out at a finite value of the coupling, such that at very high energies, the coupling is constant and finite, and like non-vanishing. And the theory is therefore described by an interacting fixed point, where the scale dependence of theory vanishes at non-vanishing values of the couplings. While I've introduced asymptotic safety in the context of gravity, the general idea of asymptotic safety, so the quantum realization of scale symmetry, is not unique to gravity. And there are several examples for asymptotic safety in systems without gravity. And in particular, I want to highlight these gauge Yukawa systems, where the asymptotically safe fixed point, so this interacting fixed point, is actually under perturbative control. So since asymptotic safety is generically described or characterized by an interacting fixed point, we need tools that are suitable to explore such a fixed point and such a scale invariant regime. And one can use perturbative methods to some extent, for example, by going to two-dimensional space where gravity becomes perturbative. And if I now go to 2 plus epsilon dimensions, I can explore asymptotic safety when going away from this perturbative. Yes?
Very naive question. When the coupling goes to zero, it's asymptotically free because it's not coupled to something.
Yes, it's yeah.
It's asymptotically free. What is free from? Can you?
It's non-interacting. So the coupling goes to zero. So it's just a free. I mean, there's no interactions in the theory.
And what is safe from?
So safe means that it's, I mean, that it is safe in the sense that there's no no divergences, but it is interacting. So it's not free, but it's also not divergent, so it's safe.
Safe from divergence.
It's, yes. Yes, Ted?
Is asymptotic safety the same as saying that the theory becomes a conformal field theory in the ultraviolet?
So I think in two dimensions this would be the case, because in two dimensions there's a relation between scale symmetry and conformal symmetry. However, I think in four dimensions it's not proven that this is actually the case. So I think scale symmetry itself is a little bit weaker than conformal symmetry, and it's not entirely clear whether the asymptotically safe fixed points, so the scale invariant regime, is also conformal field. So I think that's an open question.
Except in the case of gravity, if it's not conformal, then you have some global notion of scale, which doesn't sound like it's compatible with diffeomorphism invariance.
Well, so in asymptotic safety, we have, I mean, at least one scale, which is like the Newton coupling, so the Planck scale. So we, the scale at which we depart from the scale invariant regime sets the scale of a system.
But let's say we're in Euclidean quantum gravity just for a moment.
Yeah.
Then we can at least talk about high momentum and know what we mean.
Mm-hmm.
But what's bothering me is that, if I had a curved Euclidean manifold, the tangent spaces don't a global flat space, so I don't know at one place what high momentum means compared to high momentum in another place. So I would think that the only thing that's meaningful is locally high momentum, which would mean I would need conformal symmetry, not a global scale symmetry.
Okay, yeah, so what we typically do is, so we have to employ to exactly what you mentioned, to distinguish high energies and low energies, or high momentum and low momentum, we have to introduce an artificial, or a technical background against which we measure momentum scales. And I think this then sets the notion of what high and low momentum is.
So it's not going to be a background independent quantum gravity theory?
Well, so this. The background that we introduce is just introduced on a technical level. So, and in the end, one doesn't have to specify this background at all. In practical computations, we typically do, but we can then systematically investigate whether or not the results that we obtain are actually independent of the background. So the inclusion of a background is only necessary in the functional renormalization group. If I go to lattice techniques, for example, and do dynamical triangulations, there is no notion of a background, and this would be a genuine, a manifestly background independent approach.
Thank you.
Okay, so I covered the perturbative methods, and now there's also, as I just mentioned in the reply to Ted, there's also lattice methods that we can employ, and these consist of dividing or discretizing spacetime into triangles and sum over quantum fluctuations by summing over different ways to glue these triangles together. And then, as in any other lattice gauge theory, we would look for a second order phase transition in this discretized theory where universality kicks in and therefore describes the theory as a scale invariant. And finally, there's the functional renormalization group, which is the, I think, most commonly used method to explore asymptotic safety. And therefore, I will go and explain that in more detail. So the key idea of the functional renormalization group is to integrate out quantum fluctuations step by step. So to include the effect of quantum gravitation step by step instead of taking them into account all at once. And this is done by this object gamma k, which is the scale-dependent effective action, and gamma k includes all quantum fluctuations with momenta higher than VRG scale k. And in that sense, gamma k interpolates between something like the classical action, where no quantum fluctuations are integrated out, down to the full 1pi effective action where all quantum quantum fluctuations are integrated out. And this Wilsonian idea of integrating out quantum fluctuations according to their momentum shell is formally implemented in the path integral, which I display here for a scalar field, by the inclusion of a regulator term R. And this regulator, you see, it shows up here quadratically in the fields and therefore acts like a mass term. And since it depends on the RG scale K and on the momentum, it's a momentum-dependent mass term. And in particular, it's positive if P squared is smaller than K squared, so for low momentum modes. And these modes then become heavy because they acquire an additional mass term and are suppressed in the path integral and therefore not integrated out. While the regulator term is zero for high momentum modes, for which P squared is larger than K squared, and these are therefore not suppressed in the path integral and can be integrated out, such that in the end, gamma K contains all quantum fluctuations whose momenta are higher than the RG scale K. And then by changing K, we can describe the scale dependence of K when integrating or when taking into account more and more quantum fluctuations. And the key ingredient of the functional renormalization group is the flow equation, which provides us with a differential equation for this gamma K. So it tells us how gamma K changes when changing the RG scale. And we can use this differential equation to search for fixed points, so for regimes of scale invariance that are characterized by the fact that all the couplings of the theory do not depend on the scale anymore. And these then provide initial conditions. So this is the objects that we are looking for, so these asymptotically or these fixed points. And then these provide initial conditions to integrate down the scale dependence and like follow the flow through theory space, which is spanned by all the couplings of theory. Now, gamma K itself contains all operators that are compatible with the symmetries of a system. And for gravity, this would be diffeomorphism invariance. And there is infinitely many operators that are diffeomorphism invariant. And therefore, gamma K contains infinitely many operators, such that for practical computations, we typically have to choose a finite subset of operators and truncate gamma K in that sense. And then in a given truncation, we can look for a fixed point and compute, for example, observables or physical quantities. And then by subsequently adding more and more operators into the effective action gamma K, we then have to or can test the robustness of this method and of the fixed point that we find.
Yeah, I have a question.
Yes.
Yeah, why do you think, I mean, what make you kind of believe that this basis of operators constructed in terms of the metric is a good one? So just to give an example, if we take QCD, right? So like the low energy description is in terms of pi ends, but high energy theory is QCD, right? With quarks and gluons, and it's virtually impossible to reconstruct like these UV degrees of freedom from a low energy perspective, to construct quarks out of pi ends. I mean, presumably it's possible, but it's some very complicated non-local perhaps operator in terms of pi ends. So yeah, I wonder why you think in gravity it will be different.
Yeah, so actually that's a good point, and maybe I will come back to that later, but just as a short answer. So we start out with this idea that this might be possible, and then we can search whether there is a fixed point or whether there is a regime where a basis in terms of like the metric or curvature invariance does make sense and does admit a fixed point. And this would then mean that gravity, for example, is different to QCD in the sense that it's not as non-perturbative as QCD, so there's no such thing as confinement, but that indeed we look for a quantum field. I mean, we're still looking for a quantum field theory of a metric. So we assume that the metric is our fundamental degree of freedom. And mm-hmm. whether this is possible or not, I mean, this is, in a sense, the goal of this approach to find out whether this is possible.
I see. So it's part of hypothesis, and then you're just trying to see if it works or not, yeah?
Yes, I would say so.
Okay, thanks.
All right. So, as I've emphasized before, one of the key challenges of quantum gravity is to provide a predictive description of nature. So let me now spend a little bit of time to explain where predictivity and asymptotic safety comes from. So as I mentioned before, if our universe was scale invariant, it would be self-sim. Yes, sorry.
Sorry to interrupt again. I just want to go back to your previous one. So the functional integral description of gamma k.
Yes.
It's a complicated and very non-local expression. So for gravity, it's not just going to be polynomials of the curvature. It could be kind of crazy integrals of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Characteristic scale of k. So does this not cause problems when you try to solve this equation, just because it's an equation of some vastly bigger space than even the space of local homogeneous?
So the starting point of gamma k, so the starting point of gamma k would always be in terms of curvature invariance that might be dressed with derivatives, like with covariant derivatives. And then if we flow down to the infrared, then quantum fluctuations will, of course, induce non-localities in the infrared. But I mean, these are not part of like the theory space itself. So we
the theory space, but if I want to say write an expression for gamma k itself, as given by that path, gamma k, the UV Lagrangians would be inside that path, but gamma k itself would be a normal thing for any momentum except very large.
So I think as soon as we depart from, so as soon as we start integrating, like taking into account some quantum fluctuations, some form of non-localities will be present. But like the starting point is really like the limit where like the UV just theory where no quantum fluctuations are integrated out. And this starting point, we think, that's another assumption, I guess, that this is built of local operators. But then of course, to accurately describe gamma k, we would have to carefully integrate down the scale.
I don't want to do every talk, but more questions. So if we look at your flow, so if I wanted to build my gamma k for local operators, to do this in practice, you have to subtract counter terms because your functional integral is divergent. And the counter terms have some complicated dependence on local operators. So the differential equation I get for the local operators is not just as simple. It can be polynomial of little quantities. And you see this in the 5-4 theory, which you broke in the 5-4 theory across two vertices, for instance. So I don't see, maybe this is something to talk about later, but I'm suspicious of that equation being such a good one when I think about the flow and local operators.
So I'm not sure I was able to follow all your question, but maybe it's indeed. I would be happy to discuss that later over tea, if that's okay. All right, thank you. So let me now actually go to discussing where predictivity kicks in. And so our universe, if in the asymptotically safe scale invariant regime, our universe would be self-similar. But if we look around us, our universe looks a little bit more like this. And what I mean with this is that we see scales. So the objects that we observe are not scale invariant, they are not self-similar, and they are not very symmetric, at least some. So in order to pass from an asymptotically safe scaling regime to a description of nature, we have to depart from scale invariance. And so we can generally classify fixed points into categories. And for example, consider here a coupling with a corresponding beta function. It does have a fixed point. And on the x-axis, I just show the renormalization group scale. And now assume that I start somewhere close to this fixed point at some finite scale. And this fixed point acts such that I'm automatically pulled towards the fixed point when I lower my renormalization group scale. So in that sense, this fixed point describes an infrared attractive direction, so we call it irrelevant direction. And we see that for a large set of initial conditions, I'm always pulled towards this exact fixed point. And this means that even if I manage to depart from the exact fixed point infinitesimally at some scale, I will automatically be pulled towards it towards lower scale. Therefore, these directions cannot be used to depart from scale invariance, but in turn, they provide predictions of the coupling in the infrared because all of these trajectories, so all of these initial conditions, will get focused around the fixed point value. Now, exactly the opposite can, of course, also happen. So if I deviated infinitesimally from this fixed point, I will be automatically pushed away from this. And therefore, these directions, which we call relevant directions, are indeed, or do indeed allow us to depart from scale invariance and transit into a non-scale invariant regime as we need it to describe infrared physics. However, it comes at the cost that here we see that now the coupling at low scales is not fixed anymore, but it strongly depends on the initial conditions. So these relevant directions come with a free parameter, so I have to perform a measurement to determine what the value of the coupling, or which trajectory I chose from the UV to the IR. And therefore, predictivity is in asymptotic safety is encoded in the number of relevant directions. And in a while I've explained this on a single coupling and a single fixed point, each fixed point can have different numbers of directions. So it can have, for example, infinitely many irrelevant directions, while only finitely many relevant directions. And therefore, this would be a predictive description of nature because we only have to fix these finite amount of terms to describe theory, to describe our theory. So with this in mind, let me now provide you a brief overview on the status of asymptotic safety for pure gravity. And starting with a seminal work by Martin Reuter, who just included the Einstein, the terms in the Einstein-Hilbert action in the gamma k and found a fixed point. The community then has gone on and included more and more higher order curvature operators into the action, and at each stage search for a fixed point. And for all of the computations so far, a fixed point has been found. And what is more interesting is that higher order curvature operators, for example, like Weyl cubed or Ricci cubed, do not add new free parameters, but they always only correspond to irrelevant directions, so to predictions of a theory. And in particular, so taken from this paper, where they included Ricci scalar, powers of a Ricci scalar up to R to the 70, one sees that the critical exponent, which determines how fast a fixed point, how fast the coupling approaches a fixed point or is pushed away from the fixed point, agrees at high orders, agrees very well with what we would expect from a non-interacting theory. So in that sense, this provides indications that asymptotic safety, while it is non-perturbative, it is not crazily non-perturbative as QCD, for example, but it is as perturbative as it gets. So it's just non-perturbative enough to be renormalizable, but everything beyond that behaves as if it was closely non-intact. And this is a very nice cross-check to the idea that indeed we can build our action or our truncation in terms of curvature operators. And it also provides us computational control about our method. Now, apart from looking for fixed points, there's obviously a couple of key questions in for asymptotically safe pure gravity. And one of them is the convergence, so adding more and more operators, whether the fixed point changes or whether the number of relevant direction changes. And as I've shown you in the previous slide, we have actually quite good evidence, in my opinion, that we do see or we go towards apparent convergence of our of the fixed point. And an additional question is the question of Lorentzian signature, because the functional renormalization group, as I've introduced it, is a Euclidean method because it determines whether modes are UV or IR according to the momentum share. Our universe, as we see it, has of course a Lorentzian signature. So we need an upgrade of the functional renormalization group or generalization to also take into account Lorentzian signatures. And actually recently, in the past couple of years, there was quite some effort and quite some progress into formulating generalizations of the function renormalization group that are suitable for Lorentz in spacetimes. And first results indicate that indeed qualitative features that we see in Euclidean are shared by the Lorentzian computations.
Can you just say, does that involve picking a Lorentz frame and defining the scale in a particular frame?
So one still has to introduce like in this artificial background metric that one uses to determine UV and IR mode, to set a momentum scale. And so in particular, this work, what they did was to, in a sense, regularize in two steps. So they introduced a UV regulator, like a Kalin-Simancic regulator, that works in, I mean, that is perfectly fine, that is defined in Lorentzian signature, but then have to add counter terms, that's an infrared regulator, and then they have to add counter terms to remove UV divergences. And in their computation so far, they find that they can remove they only have to add finitely many counter terms.
It's a very basic question.
Okay.
What plays the role of the scale that's being varied in checking for asymptotic safety?
So in this work, it is still the momentum squared, but it's a Lorentzian momentum squared. So it's not necessarily anymore this Watsonian idea of determining UV and IR just by the momentum, but one still uses the momentum squared as to integrate out modes.
How can you use momentum squared? It seems like you need a single scale. You need to Fourier analyze things and then have a well-defined partition of degrees of freedom. How can you do that with momentum squared? I don't understand that.
I
understand how a given physical quantity might only depend on momentum squared.
Yes.
Of course, you could study how it depends on that. But I thought the whole idea of the functional renormalization group was that you divide all the field degrees of freedom into two groups, and then you move the boundary.
Yes.
I don't see how that division is being done.
So I think this is the original idea of the functional renormalization group in Euclidean. And I think these generalizations that are suitable for Lorentzian spacetimes, in a sense, give up this notion, or at least to my understanding. But I admit that I have to look into these computations in more detail, and maybe we can discuss it at some later point. But I think some of this like intuition of really taking the momentum squared to just integrate like as the unique scale is given up to some extent by these generalizations. All right. Then the next, another challenge is the question on, if I find a fixed point, whether this fixed point actually defines me a well-behaved quantum field theory in terms of unitarity. So is there a conservation of unitarity of probabilities, and whether the scattering amplitudes of that theory are well-defined and finite. And also here in the last couple of years, there was quite some progress to really, for example, to compute the spectral function of the graviton, indicating that only the modes of GR are propagating and no unitarity violating modes are present, and to parameterize scattering amplitudes in terms of momentum dependent form factors and finding conditions that these scattering amplitudes are actually finite. And I will actually focus on the interplay of quantum gravity and matter, because if we look around us, we just do see a lot of matter. So it's certainly important to incorporate matter in our description of quantum gravity to figure out whether this scenario can also explain the matter degrees of freedom that we observe. And the interplay of gravity and matter, so we can already see it on a classical level that gravity and matter are generally intertwined. And we can.
Excuse me. So,
yes.
Can you go to the previous slide? Just understand a bit better. So how unitarity is checked actually? What is done to see that there are no ghost modes here?
So for example, in this work, the spectral function of a graviton was computed. So the full momentum dependence of a graviton propagator was computed in Lorentzian. So using this Lorentzian upgrade, And it was checked that the spectral function only has the massless graviton in its spectrum. And this is an indication that there are no unitarity violating modes.
So that was done at some kind of numerical computation on a lattice, or
no? So it involved numerical integrations for sure to take into account the full momentum dependence, but it's a continuous method, so it's still like this using this functional techniques to explore the graviton propagator.
Mm-hmm. I see. Thank you.
Okay. So. Coming back to the interplay of gravity and matter, so the first question that we can ask is what the effect of matter is on the gravitational fixed point. So can we add, so starting from the fixed point for pure gravity, can we add more and more matter degrees of freedom and still have this fixed point, or does the inclusion of matter actually destroy the asymptotically safe region? And then we can ask the opposite question and check whether, or like, ask what effect quantum gravity has on the matter sector, and in particular whether indeed asymptotically safe quantum gravity can support a UV-complete matter sector, so cure these problems that we see in the standard model. And then finally, of course, we would like to put everything together and ask whether there is a viable phenomenology in terms of whether the masses of the particles we observe, their interactions, and so on, can come out of our scale-invariant regime at high energies. Let me, yes, is there a question?
Yes. How has the Kelly-Stella theory removed from that procedure?
Sorry, I didn't understand. Can you repeat the question, please?
Yeah, there is a theory by Kelly-Stella, which is not unitary, and which is, however, perturbative. And how is this theory not, how is this? How is it not, how is it removed from the spectrum?
What he's saying, curvature, he's saying that he's referring to a theory where you add curvature squared.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a known result that brings in a ghost type pulse.
Yes.
He's asking how it's
right, so removed.
Okay. Yeah. So that is actually, that's a very good question. And so the point is that we don't only have r squared, but we have the full tower of curvature operators and the full tower of momentum dependence. And therefore, not only r squared, but like not only p to the 4, but also p to the 6 and so on, will enter the propagator. And what this computation here shows is that if one takes the momentum dependence of all of these operators, or like the full momentum dependence into account carefully, that it's not a polynomial, but a full function that does not have additional poles in the propagator. So like how can we avoid that? By actually taking into account the full momentum dependence, so all higher curvature operators and not just r squared. I hope that answered these questions. So let me now come back to gravity and matter. And first of all, let's investigate what the effect of matter is on the asymptotically safe fixed point. And this is just a very schematic representation of the scale dependence. So it's a very simplistic model, but I think it illustrates nicely some of the mechanisms that take place. So here we have the beta function of the dimensionless version of the Newton coupling, and we see that it has a linear and a quadratic contribution. Now, if we want to have a fixed point in pure gravity, where ns, the number of scalars, and f, the number of fermions, and then v, the number of vector fields, vanishes, this coefficient b, so gravitational fluctuations, have to come in with a positive sign, such that there actually is a balancing of these two contributions at a finite value of g. And then if we add matter fields, these coefficients as, af, and av can, of course, come with a positive or with a negative sign. And a positive sign would mean that this matter fluctuation has the same effect or a similar effect as gravitational fluctuations, and it supports asymptotic safety. While if it comes with a negative sign, then the gravitational fluctuations compete with matter fluctuations, and matter fluctuations at some point might be able to destroy this fixed point. However, if we really want to ask whether there is a bound on the number of particular matter fields, we have to go beyond this very simplistic model and take into account other operators, for example, the cosmological constant into account, that also drive the value of B. And so these coefficients.
Sorry for interrupting.
Yes.
I think my question is kind of related to the previous one. And also just understand the general structure. So, when you compute these beta functions, so do you run all the couplings? So you had this example where there were like zillions of operators added, like R to power 70 and so on. So are these all couplings actually included in kind of for all of these couplings, there is beta function and the fixed point is for all of them? Or how does it work actually?
Yes. So in this computation, where one includes like all like Ricci squared, Ricci cubed, and so on, up to Ricci to the 70, one has a set of all of the beta functions. So all of these 71 beta functions, and one looks for a fixed point of the entire system spanned by these 71 couplings.
Okay. Yeah. And then my understanding is that when you say that most of these operators are irrelevant, that
yes.
So their couplings vanish. Is it right or not at the at the fixed point?
They are interacting. So their fixed point values are non-vanishing, but their critical exponent does not deviate from the canonical scaling very much. So these operators are canonically irrelevant. So they have a negative mass dimension. And quantum fluctuations only change the critical exponents by a little bit, but not enough to make them relevant operators at the fixed point. But the coupling itself, the couplings itself are non-vanishing, so they are not zero.
I understand. Yeah. No, that's good. But yeah, but still, kind of, the low energy physics won't be sensitive to them, right? So the low energy physics is determined by these marginal and relevant operators, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. In some sense, I can forget about the rest and just work with this lowest sector. Yeah, and then this question about this quadratic gravity or stellar gravity. How make sure that we don't run into this stellar gravity, actually? That this low energy theory here is not stellar gravity, but something else.
Well, so as I said, so we have to be careful that we actually take into account all of these operators and their momentum dependence into account. And then we have to make sure
they're irrelevant, right? So I can forget about them in a sense, right? And work just with low energy theory, which must be unitary on its own.
Yeah, but I mean, we are interested in the high energy, so in the high energy regime, so in the regime where these operators are, I mean, they are canonically irrelevant, but they are still like scale invariant and constant. So we are looking at the dimensionless versions of the couplings, and these are like above the Planck scale, they are not suppressed, they are just constant.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right. So coming back to the interplay of gravity and matter, we can compute these coefficients AS, AF, and AV using the functional renormalization group, and it turns out that AS is actually negative, so the inclusion of scalar fields in a sense destabilizes the asymptotically safe fixed point, and what one finds indeed is that the system is pushed into a slightly more strongly coupled regime of gravity, and then the question on the bound on the number of scalar fields requires the inclusion of requires the exploration of more elaborate approximations of the system to fully determine whether there is a bound on. Similar for fermions, fermions also have the opposite sign as gravitation fluctuations, so also in principle counteract asymptotic safety of pure gravity. However, for fermions, it has been found that the system actually approaches a slightly more weakly interacting system, indicating that there might indeed not be a bound on the number of fermions, but also here we need higher truncations, so more elaborate approximations to fully determine this the question on the bound. And finally, vector fields have the same sign as gravitation fluctuations, so they support asymptotic safety, and in particular, vector fields can also be used to counterbalance the effect from fermions and scalars, and there is no bound on the number of vectors. So despite some of these uncertainties that still require higher more elaborate approximations, all computations so far that also includes the effect of other operators like the cosmological constant indicate that the asymptotically safe fixed point indeed supports the standard model meta content, which is a very important consistency test of the scenario of quantum gravity and matter. So let me now come to two, in my opinion, very intriguing examples on how this regime of quantum, like of asymptotically safe quantum gravity, can have an imprint or an impact on the meta sector. And for this, let's focus on the abelian gauge sector of the system, which is like the generalization of the photon sector. And there in the standard model, the beta function is positive, which means that the three fixed point is irrelevant. So if I start close to this fixed point and like extrapolate my scale dependence to higher scales, then I will be just pushed away from it. And in terms of the scale dependent couplings, the coupling will increase and at some point encounter a divergence, which was the divergence that I motivated in the beginning as an indication that the standard model breaks down. And the only way to find a theoretically consistent description of the photon sector would be to set the charge to zero at all scales. But since I can clearly see you, a non-interacting photon sector is not a phenomenologically viable description of nature. So both of these options are not viable. And if we add asymptotically safe quantum gravity to into the system, the scale dependence of a charge requires an additional contribution, Fg, which we can compute from the function renormalization group. And Fg is constant at like above the Planck scale at high scales in the fixed point regime. And below the Planck scale, where quantum gravitational fluctuations turn off, it quickly approaches zero. And in the presence of this contribution, there's now a competition between these two terms. And this gives rise to the following structure of the beta function. So at small values of the charge, the gravitation contribution dominates and turns the free fixed point into a relevant direction. So it has a negative sign. And this means that asymptotic freedom for the charge is an option. And then at larger values of the charge, there is a balancing between meta and gravitational fluctuations, which gives rise to an additional asymptotically safe fixed point where the charge corresponds to an irrelevant direction. And the combination of these two fixed points actually give rise to something that turns out to be an upper bound on the charge at all scales. And let me guide you through this, which was investigated by Astrid Eichhorn and Fleur Fesserin a couple of years ago. So if we start in a regime where at high scales, the gravitational contribution dominates, so at small values of gy. So let's take a point somewhere here in this blue region. Then I just extrapolate my scale dependence to higher scales. So the coupling increases towards the Planck scale because Fg is still zero. At the Planck scale, Fg now becomes constant and positive such that the overall sign of the beta function is negative. So if I then further increase the scale, then I will be like the coupling decreases because of the overall negative sign of the coupling, and my coupling becomes asymptotically free. And therefore, UV complete. Now, conversely, if I start in a regime at higher values of gy, again below the Planck, I follow the meta-driven flow to the Planck scale, where then Fg kicks in, but Fg is not large, or this contribution is not large enough such that still the meta contribution dominates and the coupling continues to increase, which again gives rise to a Landau pole. So in this scenario, the Landau pole is still present and these trajectories are not UV safe. So the meta sector remains UV incomplete. And in between these two regimes, there is one trajectory that emanates from exactly this asymptotically safe fixed point, where the coupling remains constant down to the Planck scale, and where it then just decreases following the meta-driven flow. So in the sense, this one single predictive trajectory separates the viable regime from the UV incomplete regime, and therefore acts as an upper bound on the charge at all scales. So if we measured, for example, the charge at infrared to be above this upper bound, we would know that this would be in conflict with the paradigm of asymptotic safety, because it just wouldn't solve the Landau-Pohl problem in the charge sector. Therefore, this upper bound actually puts constraints on the theory of quantum gravity and matter, since the gravitational dynamics determine what the value of G is and where exactly this upper bound is located. And in this work by Astrid and Fleur, they put in the fixed point values for the gravitational couplings and determined that indeed this upper bound is above the measured value of the hypercharge of charge, and therefore asymptotic safety passes this crucial consistency test and can accommodate for a UV complete abelian gauge sector. Now, just to highlight how strong these constraints can be, let me go a step further and extend the dimensionality of our space and go to dimensions larger than 4. And we can still compute FG and determine in which regions of the gravitational parameter space spent by G and lambda the abelian gauge coupling can become UV complete. And we see here for D equals to 4 and for D equals to 6, comparing these two plots, we see that the viable regime, so the UV completion, shifts into a more strongly coupled regime of quantum gravity. There's independent indications that such a strongly coupled regime is actually problematic. And you can think about it as that gravity induces new interactions, so like for photon or for scalar interactions, and these interactions also pose conditions on gravity to be UV complete. Because we also want to UV complete them because they are present. And these might pose additional conditions. And in D equals to 4, we see that there still is a regime in the gravitational parameter space where both the abelian hypercharge as well as induced interactions can be UV completed, while this is not the case anymore in D equals to 6, such that these conditions on demanding a UV complete matter sector might indicate that the U1 gauge sector could be UV incomplete in D equals or larger than 6, even in the presence of asymptotically safe quantum gravity. And this, in my opinion, is a very nice nice example how strong these constraints on just demanding a UV complete matter sector can be. So let me briefly mention a second example for the predictive power for the impact of gravity on the matter sector. And let's focus on the Yukawa sector, and in particular approximated by a single Yukawa coupling. Why? The pure standard model structure of the Yukawa coupling is very similar to the one of the charge sector, where again the free fixed point is irrelevant, such that one would encounter a Landau pole, or the only theoretically viable option would be to set the Yukawa couplings to 0, which however would mean that the fermions in that system would be massless, which is also not what we observe. Now, computing the gravitational contribution to the scale dependence of the Yukawa coupling, it turns out that there's two different regimes. So in this orange regime here, Fy is actually negative above the Planck scale. And therefore, there is no balancing between the gravitational and the matter contribution. And instead, the Landau-Pohl problem of a divergence is even enhanced by gravitational contributions. And in turn, in this green region, the sign of Fy is positive, and then we are in this very same situation as in the gauge sector. But here we already see that, again, quantum gravitation contributions put, or demanding a UV completion of the Yukawa sector, put constraints on the parameter space of gravity because only this green region is phenomenologically viable. And now, of course, we would like to compare the fixed point values of a system with these conditions, and we see that for a single generation of fermions, the fixed point value is deep in this orange regime, so it's not phenomenologically, or it's not in agreement with the observation of non-vanishing fermion masses. Now, adding more and more fermions to the system, this fixed point starts to move towards the green region. And indeed, for three generations of fermions, the fixed point lies in this green phenomenologically viable region. So there now is this additional asymptotically safe gravity matter fixed point that can give rise to non-vanishing Yukawa couplings. And this system is particularly nice because the predictive trajectory that emanates from this asymptotically safe fixed point gives rise to a top mass in the infrared, which is within like approximation or like estimates for the systematic uncertainties in agreement with the measured top mass. So from this asymptotically safe fixed point in this simple system, we can retrodict the top mass of the standard model. And this, I mean, just to reiterate, this is very, very nice because it would mean that the parameter that is just a free parameter in the standard model that we have to measure can be computed from first principles in an asymptotically safe gravity matter set. All right, so let me briefly summarize my talk, like on this very positive note, in my opinion. So I've started out with explaining the main idea of asymptotic safety as quantum scale invariance, such that at high energies, our universe would be quantum scale invariant and self-similar. Then introduced the main tool, namely the function renormalization group, that in spirit integrates out quantum fluctuations according to the momentum shell and allows us to extract the scale dependence of the system. I then provided an overview of the status of asymptotically safe quantum gravity with and without matter, and I've highlighted two intriguing phenomenological implications, namely first, that demanding EUV completion of the matter sector provides conditions on the gravitational dynamics, and second, that in some cases we might even be able to predict or retrodict the value of certain standard model parameters. Now, before finishing, let me also mention that along this road towards asymptotically safe quantum gravity, we might encounter a bridge that allows us to cross to other approaches to quantum gravity. And this bridge is in terms of what we call effective asymptotic safety. And there the idea is that instead of having the asymptotically safe regime realized up to arbitrarily high energies, is that we are in a system where we have a fundamental cutoff scale at which some fundamental theory, for example, strings or loops or spin foams, admits a quantum field theoretic description. And in this scenario, or in this idea, this fundamental scale is above the Planck scale, such that we have an asymptotically safe scaling regime. Now, if such a regime exists, the infrared attractive nature of the fixed point still remains. So wherever these initial or a large set of initial conditions, the interacting fixed point will still pull the trajectories towards this fixed point, such that at the Planck scale, the couplings are approximately well described by the fixed point values. And this allows other fundamental theories, for example, strings or loops, to connect to the standard model using an intermediate asymptotically safe scaling regime. And this idea has been used to investigate whether asymptotic safety and other approaches are compatible with one another or whether they are genuinely different and incompatible. And in particular, we have employed this idea to investigate Lorentz invariance violations in quantum gravity, and more recently also to check whether some of the Swampland conjectures can be reconciled with asymptotically safe quantum gravity. And so let's now head back to our roadmap. And just to give an outlook, in my opinion, the most promising directions for the future are to explore the Lorentzian signature, or to explore asymptotic safety with Lorentzian signature. And as I said, there are already a couple of technologies and methods on the market that we can use to, in the future, really explain or search for asymptotic safety in a Lorentzian setup. Then the question on the convergence of the fixed point and the control of the fixed point results. And also there, we have new techniques and new computational methods and also just hardware to perform larger computations And to make a connection with lattice approaches to quantum gravity that share different systematic or that have different systematic uncertainties, such that we can use functional and lattice tools in a concerted fashion to explore the existence and the features of asymptotically safe quantum gravity. And then on a more phenomenological path, of course, we would want to extend these simple toy models that I've shown you or that I've presented to more and more realistic models that account for the standard model sectors and investigate to what extent the predictions of the features that I've explained are still valid. And then in the last couple of years, the paradigm of asymptotic safety for gravity, so the realization of scale symmetry, has been used as a guiding principle for model building, for example, in the search for dark matter, in the construction of dark matter models, and also for neutrino physics. And I think these are very promising results. So there's hopefully many intriguing and exciting news coming up. So stay tuned, and thank you very much for your attention.
Can I ask? Thanks, Mark. I have a question. Since you mentioned at the end possible bridges, maybe I misunderstood your slide about the dimension for the coupling U1, but in string theory, we would like to say that we are tiny, and you like to say that as you increase the dimension, you're getting worse with respect to the completion. So can you comment on that?
Yes. So. I think actually in this paper, we have investigated a scenario, or we have investigated conditions that there is a gap between the compactification scale and the Planck scale. And if that happens, then there is a four-dimensional quantum field theoretic regime of string theory that might be achievable. For the example of string theory, we would need that scenario to happen. So that this fundamental scale, for example, would be the compactification scale, where then we have a four-dimensional quantum field theory. And we need that to be above the Planck scale such that the asymptotically safe fixed point can actually still do its magic and attract the couplings towards it along the infrared attractive direction.
I noticed that you didn't mention there's this famous calculation by Shaposhnikov and Vedderish of the Higgs mass,
yes,
from analogous to the top quark
calculation
you described. What is the status of that?
Thank you for mentioning that. So the two examples that I've shown were the gauge coupling and the Yukawa coupling, and so it's a slightly different mechanism that is able to predict the Higgs mass, but there was a computation by Christoph Wetterich and Misha Shaposhnikov, where they computed the mass of the Higgs mass even before the Higgs particle was detected. So it was a genuine prediction. And however, this prediction is very sensitive to the measured value of the top mass. So depending on the loop computations and the measurements, this prediction switches a little bit. But I think the most recent results are that it is compatible within a reasonable amount, reasonable assumptions on the error bars. But of course, so the prediction on the Higgs mass more sensitively depends on the standard model running.
Okay. All right. Well, we've had a lot of questions during the talk also, and we're over time. So let's thank Mark one more time for everyone.